for trainee surgeons, this was quite important. So they got their heads together and they came up with a plan. And we'll call this iteration one. They wanted to pay for cadavers. And on the surface, this looked really good because cadavers come in. There was lots of cadaver stocks, but there was some technical debt. Under the surface in society, reports of grave robberies increased. Homeless that were dead or near dying on the road, scooped up, given, traded in for cash. And I imagine an instance where someone in your family may have died and funerals were expensive. And you're like, "Whoa, I could get some money for Dad." Right? Just imagine what that would feel like. No money, money. So to their credit, the medical institution said, "We need another idea." So they came up with another idea. We'll call this iteration two. Pigs. So pigs have a biological structure that's very similar to humans. And so they were like, "Well, we can take that." And it was really good, right? So it addressed the society issues that they wanted to address. But it relied on a specific management structure from training on pigs to training on people. Surgery on pigs to surgery on people, right? And that's where I feel we are with development. We train, we write our code on pigs, have some magic gate, and then it goes into production. And it's nothing like we have in development, and we wonder why we have problems, right? So I feel iteration three is here. And it's not only a technical solution, but the tool chain that I'll demonstrate today will help us set this up and also give us some new ideas and some thinking around where we want to go. So the tooling. So the tooling is the major enabler here, but we also need to understand some fundamental ways in how we can change our thought process and how that all works together to give the developer an experience that is similar to now, right? Because before, in times, it would be just too hard or too slow, you know? We all know about the disruptionists of a context shift, long builds, et cetera, they just blow your mind, right? So look at the tool chain here. Hopefully, this will look somewhat familiar and maybe somewhat unfamiliar, okay? So I just want to point out a couple of things that we have here now. So first of all, we've got source, right? So if we're going to bring in a production system under the guise of a VM, we need a way to configure that, express that configuration in source so that everyone else gets that configuration as well. It's no good having that only work on one PC, having to repeat that other places. Okay, a key enabler in this tool is a product called Vagrant by the people over at HashiCorp. They're very smart people. And that basically is the plumbing between your computer and the VM. And it provides a really nice layer of abstraction without limiting visibility. We also have some logging. So this is some App Insight logging, structured logging, serialized logging. Not necessarily a requirement for this, but it is part of the new way of thinking. And I'll be touching on that later. Okay, so pets and cattle. So anyone heard of the analogy pets and cattle? Wow. So you must be all developers, not infra people, right? Okay, so pets and cattle is around immutable infrastructure. If we have cattle and we want a new server, instead of reconfiguring it, we just build it again. And then we put our code on it, right? So this has come around in the last probably 4 years, especially with cloud compute. So you have a cloud instance, you turn it up, you configure it, you put your code on it, you run it, and then when it's done, you shoot it and then have some dinner, right? And pets are the stuff that we like they might be your Active Directory server. They can, in this instance, they're also your PC, right? We like it a different way. We want it our way, right? They're close to us. So in this example, I'd like to take the pets and cattle analogy, but just give it a slight twist. So you can see in here, I live in a semi-rural part of town, and my kids are raising lambs for Ag Day, right? And so we have a saying, we have a rule in our house, you can't eat pets. Okay, and we define pets as something that has a name. So this is Coco, Lexi, Baby, and Teddy, right? So we can't eat them, right? And that's Leia the dog as well. So that's the kind of sort of little bit of different thinking that we need to bring in this thought process that we have here. So where do we think the cattle is in our particular tool chain here? Well, if we were applying an immutable infrastructure point of view, we would say it's the virtual machine, right? But in fact, it spans, in this specific instance, it can span into, it bleeds into a lot of all those areas, right? And so I'm going to give you some patterns. We're going to go through some patterns of how they work together and what the thought process is so that you can stop coding on pigs. Okay, so the cattle building blocks. The first thing, there's four of them. I was told not to put numbers in bullet points, but there was four of them. Okay, so we have the base image. Then we have a concept of configuration management. Okay, the build and deploy. We'll look at approaches for build and deploy, and then we'll look at the plumbing, how it all works together in a seamless process, so even if you put it in, your developers won't even know what's going on, right? So let's have a look at base image, okay? Targets what's in production. Wow, that's a big statement, right? How many know what version of the operating system they run in production? Wow! It doesn't help, you know, when you have a version name that only differs with the letters R2, right? So is it 2008 or is it 2008R2? That can be quite confusing, right? We can have another pattern where we can reuse these images. Everyone's on SSDs these days, right? Crazy cool, really fast. But now we've got, no, not on SSDs. But they have a space constraint, right? So we really need to fit with how people are working. But as we go into this, I'll just bring some advice to here about how we might, when we're starting out, how we can manage the tension. But one of the things that I am looking forward to is NanoServer and containers, right? There's some really cool stuff coming out there. Getting a footprint from a VM from about 7 gigs for your average 2012 R2, that's like cut down. That's what we call bare metal in the Windows world, right? A NanoServer footprint's about 500 meg bare metal, right? That stuff is just way, way cooler, right? And containers. Everyone loves containers, right? No? Maybe? I love containers. Okay. So on to configuration management. So the configuration management is an idea of how we can express configuration changes as a DSL, right? Anyone using configuration management in production or in-house? Anyone used any of these tools? No one's using DSC, Chef Puppet? Yeah. Configuration management basically allows us to express server configuration as code, you know? And if we think about that, we're just like, as developers, we go, well, that's obvious, right? But when you think about that, you could take a generic server, apply any form of configuration, and bam, you've got a configured server for your application, right? So we've got this layered approach to it. Not only... So, and those, who's tried to configure 2IS, right? In their own box, and there's that one freaking setting that you're looking for, and it takes you hours, because you only do it every 6 months or something, probably when you get a new PC, probably not maybe every 6 months, maybe a bit longer, but, you know, and those frustrating times there, well, you could just have a script that just configures that every time, all the time, the right way. Just take that problem away, right? The other thing is it has its own life cycle. So if you've got configuration management, you can bring a pipeline to that configuration management. And just think about that. Someone makes a configuration change, it goes through its own testing, QA, and then can spit out artifacts that you could consume in your development time to find out if you've got problems. So it's really powerful. Okay? And so, in general, it provides a robust, repeatable, and auditable, for those in compliance, server configuration. But there is a danger. I have seen many people try to get into this game and fall over at configuration management. It is complicated if you do not have configuration management in-house. A couple of advice. Maybe your first iteration here, start with a golden image, right? Get your image, make it all like what you want, box it up, and use that. Second, anyone use BoxStarter? Okay, BoxStarter is the shiz, people. Okay, Matt Rocks, he's really cool, okay? And get across. He can help you do amazing things about configuring your machines just by a couple of PowerShell scripts. Okay, approaches to build and deploy. So the key thing here is we need a process that runs build logic locally the same way that it does on the CI server. And you can't get that if you put all of your logic in your CI server, right? So you've got to build PS1 all the things. Abstract your logic for build in your PS1 file, and then you can run it anywhere. Okay, call it from the CI server, call it from your local server, but it's actually exactly the same path, right? Everyone's doing it. Everyone can see what's going on, and they can do it. And the plumbing component. So this is basically managed by Vagrant. There are some other things that you might have to do in your stack, but primarily the key thing that it does, so you're on your development laptop, and I'll demo this shortly. You have your repo path somewhere locally. It basically binds an SMB share to that virtual machine. So when you're running that on the prod version of the server, pointing back to your machine, any changes are pretty much instants, right? So you don't have to wait for a file copy, or you don't have to wait for it to boot up. It is a real seamless experience. And it provides an abstraction is visible. I'm a key. I can't remember who coined this phrase. I think it was Scott Hanselman. Information radiators, right? Things that inform people, right? That they can go in and see what's going on without having to ask anyone. They can just find out themselves, okay? I think a wiki is not an information radiator, but you might disagree with me. But these are really cool concepts to hold on to. So I'm going to show a demo of basically taking, so I've just downloaded a sample application, and we're going to see what the steps are in getting Vagrant and the tool chain and some logging all sorted and running from a web application. All right, let's see if I can do this. All right, so basically I've got just a MVC app, MVC4. It's just running, so if we just run that. Okay, it's coming out of localhost, so I think this is kicking out of 2IS Express. Okay, and so it just does a little bit of stuff about university stuff, right? So let's just, we'll kill that. Okay, so Vagrant, you can download Vagrant over here and you can install it. I would also encourage you to push past that next experience. Maybe look at Choco install, and also PowerShell 5 install package, right? The one-get provider is really cool for expressing packages. Now, packages is something that existed in the Linux world for donkey's years, right? That concept to pull in a package, sort of view installation files as a dependency. So if you're writing your script, you can just go install package, find package, all that stuff. It's really cool. Vagrant also has a concept of boxes, and a library. So they have a community library that you can pull in. You can go and find the box that you need if you need to start. But if you're going to start yourself, you can also have your golden image and bring it in, right? So I've been using this image. And you can see that they provide providers outside Hyper-V. MS OpenTech also submitted a pull request, Vagrant's open source, for using the Azure provider. So you could use Azure machines in your Azure subscription to run these things, right? So if you're needing to create more, if you want to simulate load balancing perhaps, you could do that and not have to find space on your really precious SSD. Now I would love to do the initialization stage here. It takes a bit of time. I think the box download also is pretty slow. So just a water version. So basically, what I have done is I have installed it, and it has created me a Vagrant file here. So if we look at that Vagrant file. Okay, so basically, one of the things here, it's just telling us what the box we're using. And so what it does is it goes, finds the box, we'll put it in your cache so you don't have to download it again, and then it will provision a VM for you. Okay. The other important thing, there's a whole lot of stuff here. The other important things are these synced folders, right? So these are how they set up the folders. So let's get it running on Vagrant. So all we have to do is Vagrant up. Oh, and administrative privileges. So what's that doing? That'll take a little bit of time. But as you see here, I have the, I don't want that one. The virtual machine running here. What it'll do is it checks that Hyper-V is running, makes some Hyper-V commands, starts the machine. So if we go back to here, see it's starting the virtual machine. So the first time you do this, you might want to do it when you make your coffee or something like that. It is pretty slow, but this is a constraint of the operating system. So when you have nano server and containers, I get this step will be a lot faster. And also I'm running on Wi-Fi, so I really wanted to challenge my demo today. Okay. So as it comes through, does a bit of stuff, and then it'll ask me for an SMB share password. Okay, now. Okay, so it'll go off and do that. But let's have a look at this image, right? So this is a golden image that I've created. It's basically just what's running in production. If you use a box off the Vagrant site, please change the password of the local administrator because they're all the same. That's your security announcement for today. So if we have a look here, it was creating an SMB share to inet www root web. Right? So that there is now pointing back to my machine, all of my binaries on my machine. And if I look at the IIS configuration, which I had set up before. If we look at the basic settings in here, it's just pointing to that. So I'm assuming that that's going to be my IP address. I didn't check that. But let's go and test it, huh? Is it going to work? Right, so I'm just doing this locally from within the VM. So this is not, you might want to do this testing or something like that. But you say, yes. Okay, so we got it there. So if we go down here, and because we build PS1 everything, if I just show you what my funky build. Okay, all I'm doing is really, really hard here. I'm just calling MS build, passing some arguments, and then I'm doing a start process. So that is basically the equivalent of pressing F5, right? You get a nice little web page for your developers. They're all happy. They don't have to type in anything. You mean, who likes command line? Who doesn't like command line? Yeah, see? So we can work with, and this is the key thing, right? We can structure things for how people like to code, because that's a pet analogy right there, right? Some people like to do it, you know? But we like to say, no, you need to do it like this. We need to remember that we're emotionally tied to our technology. So basically, if I close that, if I come back in here and I build that, it'll go through. And do we have a winner? Oh, there it is. So all the thing that I've done here, if we just to do a couple of checks. Oh, it doesn't do my address bar. This thing here, I've added a host entry for that to point to my server, right? So there's a couple of things there. You could do it in a private. I need internet access on the virtual machine for a demo coming up. So I'm tempting fate a little bit. But if we go around, and we should be able to see what's going on and go through the page. Ooh, looks like something's not right. Just wait for this to load. It should be a lot faster than this. Oh, I got an error. Ah, ha, 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 ha. Database. Yes, who said that? Yeah, okay. So let's just think about what we've done here. We've taken what we're running locally in our own production, in our own development environment, and we've tried to put that into production, right? And we've assumed that we're running local DB in production. Who runs local DB in production? Yeah? Okay, so now, okay, I call this an anti-Conway maneuver, right? Anyone heard of Conway's law? Okay, Conway's law, basically paraphrased, says the software that you produce will only be as good as the communication structures in your organization, right? Basically what they're saying is your software will always have potential, right? This is an anti-Conway maneuver. I now have to go and find out what I need to install on the database. So I go have a talk to the DBA, and he says, oh, we just roll with SQL Express. So I then go, okay. So I prepared some code earlier. Okay, so if I just, we go back into Visual Studio, and we'll have a look at our web.config. So I've got a SQL Express connection string now. Okay, so if I now build that, it's the only change that I made. If I build that puppy and open it up, I've also installed the database. This was using Entity Framework, so it will go and see the database for me as well. But I mean, it just brings us, it just forces us to have communication. And as technical people, sometimes we're not equipped to have communication with people. It's the best thing, get to know people. It might be hard, but they think, they're probably thinking the same way. Isn't that funny, right? We think, oh, no, I can't have a conversation with that person. And they're thinking the same way. All right, so let's see if we've got a database. So now we've got a database, right? So now on that, we've now taken what we've had in development, we've sprinkled on a little production constraints, and now we're a step closer to coding in production. All right? Any questions? Okay, so in that one there, we looked at what it would take. So a bit of confession here. I spent probably about 4 hours configuring that VM, right? And so there's about 4 hours there. We made some changes in code to get it on. So maybe about a day, maybe 2 days max, right? 2 days max. Excluding all the conversations that you had. Who thinks that would be easy to find in their organization what they're running, what their database is running in production? Who thinks that would be easy? That's amazing. Who thinks as a developer working on a product, they need to know this? Yeah, I'm encouraged by that, right? And we should make it easy to find this stuff up, right? So I'm going to jump into another demo now, and I'm just going to give you some context. So I used to work at Olympic Software, and we wrote the e-commerce software for Woolworths and the Countdown stores. I was a senior contributor on the team, and one of the most frustrating things that I had was giving HTTPS development support. It was just crazy. I was there for 4 years. In that 4 years, there was about 1 billion Chrome changes, 3 versions of Internet Explorer, and about 5 versions of Firefox, and everything touched on HTTPS. One thing you could do it, then it's not. Who has a build defect log? Who keeps a log of all the defects that they make past their machine? So in QA and production, anyone keep a defect log? I highly recommend it. It's a very humbling experience. My top ones, HTTPS errors, right? Who's hard-coded an image to HTTP? I bet none of you guys have. I used to do it all the time, eh? Right? And it would get in there, and Internet Explorer used to give you that little thing, right? Do you want to download this unsafe material? And then Chrome came along and said, no, we're not going to do it, so we're just not going to show it, right? And who loves cause errors? I hate cause errors, right? Because they don't even give you a log. The browser just says, nah, you can't do it, right? And so you get a report in, someone says, oh, it's not working. Right. Do not get me started on self-signed certificates as well. That stuff should be really easy, right? But as I tried to think about ways to give our contributors HTTP access, that configuration leaked all through the code, right? And I got so far that managing code and state of your code is hard when you have to put on top of that the configuration. So if I just did HTTPS for development and forgot a switch to turn that off and that went to production, oh, man, that would be fun. Wouldn't enjoy that conversation with the client, right? So if we look at what we have in the tool chain that we have now, HTTPS is fundamentally a configuration change. So all we need to do is make a configuration change on our server. So I'll demo that now. So if we go into our little virtual machine here, it's our production machine. As you can see, we've got like a little web. We're just going to add not a basic setting, we're going to add a binding. Thank you. You come see me later on and I'm going to give you some candy. Right? Anyone else helps me? Don't you just hate it when you're sitting there and you're going like, oh, I'm like, that's not working. And everyone knows what's going on. And they're like, oh, it's a semicolon. But no one says. Kia ora whānau. Okay, so we're good. Thanks. Okay, so I'm just going to add a binding. Of course, all of you guys know how to do this. So I've just got a certificate ready. Oh, SSL certificates need to be way easier, right? They just need to be way easier. Too many times in production, we would code with self-signed certificates that weren't signed. And they would be like red. And that's normal. And we would just go, oh, yeah, it's just development. Oh, it's just, I know companies in UAT wouldn't pay for an SSL certificate, right? And then we wonder when we get to production, and there really is an error with the certificate. Why didn't we catch that earlier? Okay, so I'm just going to do that. So after that rant, I have a self-signed certificate, so it will give us an error, right? So I've just configured that server. If we had configuration management, we could express that as code, and we can provision another machine, do that straight away. If it was an image, we might have a life cycle for our images. Wrap that in a box, they'll get it. It will reprovision. Everyone's got it. Sipping drinks on the beach. All right. So if we test that out, just on the local machine, because we're iterative like that, it tells us, ooh, that's pretty cool. So we'll just ignore that because everyone ignores that. Oh, wrong one. Thank you. Oh, kia ora. You guys are awesome. Okay, so I'm now on HTTPS on the local machine, okay? So let's try and... Who manages a website or something like that serves both HTTP and HTTPS? Yeah? Only HTTPS. Yeah, make it HTTPS. It will just reduce a lot of your pain. And the security people like it for some reason as well, but... Okay, so I've done that. So all I'm going to do now is... we're just going to edit our build PS1. I could have done this in... and I'm just going to put an S in here. Okay, so we'll save that. And I'll just make sure that I've got that change. Ah, oh, sweet. Okay, so then I'll go build... Yeah, so I got the padlock. I'm still getting used to Edge, right? So I got the padlock. If I open that in Chrome. Chrome's going to tell me there's going to be a disaster. Oh, somehow I must have signed the certificate or pulled it into my trusted root. But straight away, one line of code in our build file, right? Configuration management, and now we're coding in HTTP, HTTPS. Who has a HTTPS environment in their house today? How easy was that? Was that pretty easy? Cool. I might need to come and see you. Okay. So it's just kind of thinking that how we can help people do what they're supposed to do in production, right? And that's the main goal here, right? How we can serve the people that we work for. Training manual for this guy. All right. Okay, so I have some new thinking. There was one fundamental thing that I didn't demonstrate. Anyone hazard a guess to what it was? What do you normally do when you're running your code? What do you like the most? Debug. There it is. Who said debug? Right. Okay. You ready for this? Logging is the new debugging, friends. Okay, and that's a big statement, right? People love their debugger. Okay, and why am I saying this? Debugging does not scale across your organization. Okay, debugging, once it's out of your environment, soon that first step into test or QA or whatever it is, there's no debugging there. Well, you could put debugging, right? I apologize. You could have remote debugging. But typically, when you're doing your Agile, everyone running Agile here, right? Right? You finish your story, you run your unit tests, you do a little bit of smoke testing yourself, push it through the pipeline, goes to QA. Then you're on the next story, right? And the tester comes. You know the testers. They're lovely people. I love testers, right? And they come and they go, Ruben, there's a defect, right? And you're like, okay, hang on. So you get this big context shift, right? Save your code, stash it somewhere, pull in a branch, pull that char back or get that version back, have a look. Oh, I think it's over here. Get that debugger up. Oh, what is it over here? You're already behind the eight ball, okay? If you have logging, okay, it can give you way better information faster, right? And it scales. What I'm talking about is, I'm not only talking about logging, because logging in the old days used to be one gig text files or your log files. Anyone pulled them into a text editor lately? Hey, that's a whole lot of fun, that is. Find and replace, right? So primarily that is logging noise, right? And by having semantic and centralized logging, okay, we can mitigate that, right? We can provide an experience that reduces the noise and gives you a high signal-to-noise ratio, right? To find the information that you want to find, right? And log the information only you can log, okay? And it also prepares you when you get errors in production. Who's never had a production error? Right? Who does, anyone keep their symbol files, do memory dumps to analyze that? Well, it's a hardcore guy right there, yeah, and back there. Much respect. Okay. How easy is that? Is that a lot of fun for you? No. Yeah. Okay. That's like the, I have to go to the middle, right? Yeah. Okay. It's kind of fun to learn about. I encourage you to learn about it. But if you had a log that just told you where you actually, your null reference happened, like 40 lines back up the stack or something, way easier, right? But what I feel is that, and this is a, what I'm saying is big, right? Because what we have is we have developers that love debugging, but debugging doesn't scale. And typically we have strategies around logging, you know, driven typically from an operations point of view, right? But the infrastructure for logging never comes back to development. So contributors never get a chance to see what their logs. I remember when I started writing my first logs, and I wouldn't use it as a debugger. I had spelling mistakes. Ever see a log with a spelling mistake and your name on it? That's not cool, right? Or what about when you deserialize the wrong object, right? You're like, oh, I want that. Oh. And what's the one thing about logging, right? One thing about logging, you go, oh, I've got logging on that. What did it tell you? That I need more logging. Oh, I hate that. Okay? So what we need is we need an infrastructure that scales, that comes, that we can use in production, but we can also use in development, right? And sometimes there are some cost conversations that we have or some value conversations, maybe some strategic bets. But what I'm going to demonstrate today is a concept of logging, which goes a bit more than logging, using App Insights. Anyone used App Insights? Yeah. Everyone like App Insights? Yeah. Pardon me, sir?
The new stuff is better.
Yeah, the new stuff is better? Yeah. Relative to what you had before? You know, good visibility? Yeah. Okay. Continual improvement. Yes. All right. And that's what we see. So we're going to have a demo on structured logging combined with App Insights. So App Insights gives us... I was talking to my track provider. He was like, you should have a demo with... He wasn't, because he was still like that. But I was like, I'm not too sure about App Insights because it doesn't code for me. But it, I played with it within a day. I was hooked. You know when those flash dashboards, right? Like, oh, what did that person do? Oh, that person. So it does all of this telemetry, and it's really easy to get in. So let me just prep this up. Oh, I do not want to start that. Okay, so basically, Now, you have to pay attention because this is really, really hard, right? Right-click. Oh, come on. Add application insights telemetry. Okay, and that's it. Under the hood, what's happening is doing a whole lot of stuff. It's selling you children, altar at sacrifice. Basically, what it's doing is it's just adding a HTTP module, right? So you don't even have to write any code, and you will get telemetry. One little caveat that I found, it will handle exception information, but if you have custom errors turned on, it won't. You have to add a little global exception handler. But everyone has a global exception handler, right? Everyone's managing their exceptions the same way. Yeah? But yeah, if you're not, you're not going to put your hand up, though, eh? Right? Okay? So basically in here, you get like a little next experience. No judging. And then basically what it does is it will configure you, pull in NuGet and the dependencies for your application to do it, and configure you an instance of Application Insights up in Azure. All right? Now, I have multiple Azure identities, and it's a lot of fun trying to get that sorted, so I'm just going to skip ahead to something that I prepared earlier. Demo 3, step 2, I believe. So basically what I've done is I have added App Insights. So what we have is we have a little config file here, and there is like a ton of stuff in there. You can knock your socks off in this place, right, to get information that you want about your app, okay? And it goes down here. One of the key things is, I think it's down here somewhere, your instrumentation key, right? So that's what basically, that's your key that binds your service to the multiple services that you could have up in Azure, right? So let's see if we can get some telemetry going up. Okay, so let me just build PS1, all the things. We'll open up a little window here. Okay, let's click around some things. Come on, Mr. Students. Okay. Now, there is a little bit of latency with those messages coming up, and it tends to differ where you are. I'm in a conference room, even though I've got dedicated Wi-Fi that you guys don't have. I'm guessing it's just going to take a while, but let's have a look, eh? So basically, it seems, no, not that. That my bookmarks have gone. That's a trick for players. So sorry about that. I'll just log on to Azure. Portal. So off the top of my head, you get this for free, right? This telemetry stuff, you get for free. They have a... I'm already signed in. This is the fun that I have. So apparently if you go portal.azure, oh, thank you. Come see me too. I'll give you some candy as well. Oh, I love it when everyone helps. Okay, and also the App Insights stuff is on, what are they, the preview portal? Is that what it's called? Preview portal, yeah. Oh, that's why you shout it out. Ah, see, that guy's smart. You should sign him up. Okay, so on the little portal here as it starts up, I've got a little, you can get to, once you run that little wizard thing in Visual Studio, it will create you a little instance of it. I've just pinned it to my dashboard, because that's the kind of guy I am. And so basically it gives you application health. So with me having to log on and do all that stuff, hopefully we should find something up there. So let's have a look. All right, so we've got a little bit of stuff here. But let's go to search. Okay. Let's have a look what the last time. What is it, about 20 past 11? Oh, 11:16, right? No changes to code. And we have that first request page. There are a number of things that you can add to get more telemetry on that. I added a bunch of JavaScript to my layout file, and that's where that request or that page view is coming through there, right? So I've made no changes. Oh, sorry, apart from that script. And I've got request information, page view information. I can get exceptions. It is unbelievable. So it also gives you correlated stuff, right? So you can go into this request and get the details of this request, and then telemetry for the user session, 5 minutes before the event. Who wish when they're troubleshooting something in production that they had like 1 minute before the event? You know, that's really helpful, right? That context is amazing. It stops us having to guess. Because one thing I love about development, right? And you're writing your code and you're going, yes, it's going to go here. Yes, it's, and then you read it and then you write it and then you run it and it does nothing like what you thought. Right? Just like how users use your website. Nothing. Well, oh, they went it that way. Right? And this gives us evidence, right? When this is another pet peeve I have. We make decisions on implementation and features based on a guess. You ask someone where their evidence is. I think that we should have red. Where's the evidence for that? Oh, I'm just feeling that. Okay, let's do it. Right? Sink a ton of money into that. Is that a well-placed bet? You know, as developers, we need to understand the cost and what value we're providing to the organization, to the business, that bad word, business. So just basically right-click, add telemetry information, fill out a couple of Azure stuff. This is my MSDN Azure subscription, right? But I believe it's free anyway, the first, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right? And it gives you a bucket load of information, right? So if you had this, even in test, you could have it. This stuff could work locally, in test, in all of your pipeline, sys test, QA, UAT, pre-pod, whatever you have, production, right? And you've got information, right? So one of the things I am now going to check out is structured logging. Who does structured logging in their app today? Who thinks they should have done it a long time ago? Yeah. You did it? Oh, this is smart. 20 years. No, it's not new, right? And I agree, yeah. So isn't it interesting how long things take to adopt, right? And they're very helpful, right? I mean, one of the other things, how am I going for time? Oh, yeah, I've got a little rant here. Who's used Visual Studio Online, right, for their own projects? You get unlimited private projects in Visual Studio Online. Unlimited, private. You don't get that in GitHub, right? And you get Git support in Visual Studio, right? And I ask people, and they go, oh, I didn't know that. For the free one, you just get limited to 5 concurrent users. That's quite a lot to make you a $1 billion app, I reckon, right? But we don't get that information, right? So we need to do better about spreading that word. So what I'm going to do now is we're going to jump into a branch that I prepared earlier. No, not that one. Okay, we'll go back into here. Not there, sorry. Okay, and if I am good. Wow. Yeah, thank you. You guys are awesome. We go back to here. Yes, that's what I want. Okay, so here's my funky little right in the constructor. Everyone puts stuff in the constructor. Oh, no, that's right. We have IOC these days, don't we? So now you just have, you know, IOC is great, isn't it? Allows you to have a constructor for your controller that takes 28 parameters or something. I think that's an anti-pattern, but never mind. But basically what I've done here, anyone used Serilog? Yep. So I'm using Serilog. Serilog is an open source product just to do my logging, and it has syncs. And one of the syncs that it provides to, i.e. where it can write to, is Application Insights. So basically all I'm doing is I'm looing up a logger configuration here and writing to a colored console, because that's what all the cool kids do as well. And then the second thing I want to do is write to Application Insights. And all I have to pass is my instrumentation key. Okay? And then I create logger. So I just make that in my logger. So basically now my logger, and here we go. I'm on master now. How about we change that and we say, sorry, no bacon today. Oh. All right, and let's run that guy. So what I'm going to do is I am going to, because this is my demo and I don't want it to fail, I'm just going to run that a few times. All right, and let's see how long it takes to get that back up. Anyone remember what the number of the custom data? This comes under the custom data element in your thing. So you can also write search parameters. So in that search there, you can see, and then that custom event. So that's where it should come up. And is it going to come up? Here we go. I don't see it. Oh. How about we refresh one more time? The top one? Or custom event? Let's have a look. Next one down? Ah, oh, it's there. Okay. So now, oh, thank you. Yeah. Is that clapping because there's no bacon, or is that? Okay. So now I am writing structured data and capturing telemetry all in one place for everyone to see. That's a pretty cool information radiator, right? Now, I agree when I'm in the zone, and debugging's really fast, right? When I'm in the zone, that latency hit could get me a little bit. But what I could do instead of that is I could come up with a hybrid solution in development, right? So I have a stock standard development, and I could add a sync to maybe an SEQ instance running locally on my machine. And so SEQ is just another centralized logging system. It can take it. You can then just create really nice filtering, give you high signal to noise, and then you could just go build one, run your machine, and then on your seek instance, just see your debugging information coming down, then realize, oh, I got a spelling mistake. Oh, I deserialized the wrong object. Right? Does it look like it's stuff I want to do? You know, figure out what's verbose, what's an error, what's not. Right? But we've got logging, and we're like one step ahead of the game. Let me get this right. Oh, sweet. Okay. All right. So what are the key takeaways that I'm trying to talk to you about today? So primarily, we're looking at a tool chain, but we're not looking at a tool chain for just a tooling's sake, right? We're looking to create new behaviors and new thinking, right? We want to work with Conway's law, and we want to create information radiators. Who thinks that they work with awesome people? Yeah. Whoa. Hope people. No. Right. See, we believe, and so, from what I find in my experience, you know, as a senior contributor or as a manager, I just have to let them be awesome. Right. There's a guy from Ticketmaster, I can't remember, I think his name's Jody something or something like that, right? At Ticketmaster, they have a phrase, let's standardize on awesomeness, right? I don't want to write rules for you. I don't want to do that. I'm not good at that. I'm not a really good police officer. I trust what you do, and I think you're awesome. Just do awesome. But so many times, we're constrained from being awesome, right? Whether that's because, oh, it's not our department. Oh, we don't do that, right? So it's these new behaviors. Understanding Conway's law, right, is really key. We looked at the pets and cattle story, so you've also now had a primer on immutable infrastructure, so now you can hang out with your ops guy, maybe, you know, break some bread with him. It's a lot harder to slag people off, you know, when you eat with them and actually know them, right? Break those barriers. They might think that there's something up or something like that, you know, but I encourage you to do it. And we've identified areas of complexity or complication, right, and where we can start. So many times it would be a great shame that I give you all this energy, and we get stuck in a problem, and we're stuck in a problem, and then 6 months we're still trying to deliver or something like that, right? But in essence, why would we want to do this? And I feel the biggest thing is we need people to succeed, right? We teach them, we put them on a box, and we say, here, code, and they make mistakes. Like when we were having HTTPS errors back at Olympic Software, it was no one's fault but mine, I felt, right? But I failed that they could learn by themselves and failed to equip them, right? We just got to give people a chance to succeed. We want to reduce black boxes, what our production black boxes look like. One of the key things that I find is that developers are not equipped to understand the load balancing structures that they have in their apps, right? And if that someone just took the time and maybe even configured an environment that had a load balancer so they could see what happens and why persistence on a load balancer is important, right? How it can reduce memory stress across your servers and ease the distributed cache, right, on your environment. These are key understandings, but these are all black boxes for a lot of people. And we have a better onboarding story, right? Just imagine if you walked into your organization that you just started and you were like, oh, how do I set up my environment? And they just go, oh, you just get from latest and you Vagrant up and you build PS1. And they're like, what? Right? Who has a really good onboarding story at their organization? Whoa, oh, one person, way at the back. Now he's hiding. Right? We need to be better at that onboarding story, right? Right? Okay, that could be a discussion for another day. But my hope, okay? My hope is that you're encouraged, okay? That you're equipped and that you're empowered to leave a legacy in your organization, right? All right, great leaders leave legacies, right? It's not about themselves. It's about how they serve other people, right? And I think I'm a big fan of getting that message back into development and infrastructure teams. And so we can all stop coding on pigs. Thank you for your time. My name is Ruben.